Okay, so it's Parshas Vayishlach, and we have here a discourse that was said in 1964, and this is a series of discourses because the year that the Rebbe's mother passed away, she passed away in Tishri in 1964, so then unusually he would give a Hasidic gathering every week. And each week there would be a maimer, a discourse, but it would be clothed, it would be presented as a sicha, as an ordinary talk. And it was printed at the time in volume 5 of Likutei Sichos. It was printed later on, a few years later. But in fact, these are discourses, and they've been like brought out by the Dvar Malchus team, presenting them as discourses with the commentary and pointing and so on. So this goes on the verse from Vayishlach, Vayikach min haba biyado mincha. So let's just see what that is in context in the Torah. So we've got here the beginning of Vayishlach. So Jacob is about to meet his angry brother Esau, who is still angry about selling the birthright and losing the blessings, the main blessing that their father Isaac gave Jacob instead of Esau. Esau was the firstborn. He should have got it. Although, in fact, the fact that he sold the birthright really meant he was selling the right to the blessing for the firstborn. But Esau didn't see it that way. So he saw it as two separate negative things that had happened to him at the hands of Jacob. So he's spoiling for a fight, and Jacob sends him, for the beginning of the Seder is the way he asks, he sends a message to Esau saying, I'm coming, are we going to meet? And they come back and tell him that Esau is not very peacefully coming towards him with 400 men. So then there's a prayer by Jacob to God. So we have this moving prayer. If we look at verse 11, Katonti mikol chasadim, I am too small to receive all the kindness, and we call it emet, all the truth, asher asitait avdecha, which you've done with me. I just had a staff when I crossed the Jordan going eastwards, and now I've got two camps. Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esau, please God, save me from Esau. Ki yare anochi oto, I fear him. Pen yavo v'hikani eima banim, he might come and wipe me out. V'ata amata, and you said, heitev heitev imach, I'm going to do good to you. V'samti et zaracha kechol hayom, and I'll make your children like the sand of the sea. Asher lo yisafeh merov, which can't be counted because there'll be so many. And here I am in this difficult situation, facing extinction right away. So Vayalen Sham Balailahu, so Jacob slept there on that night. Vayikach min haba biyado, and he took from the things that were to hand, mincha le'esav achiv, a gift for his brother Esav. Now that's the key verse. This, he took from the things that came to his hand, a gift to Esav, his brother. And what did he send? Izim Mataim Utyashim Esrim, he sent goats and rams and rechelim and ewes, and there's male goats, and then there's rams, elim, gmalim minikot, and then camels, and the camels were giving suck, that means which had baby camels with them. And according to Rashi, also the male camels, and there were bulls and donkeys, and he put it all in the hands of his servants and told them to take flock by flock these flocks to give to Esau. Now, all right, so here we have this visually interesting image. I don't know whether Cecil B. DeMille or someone like that ever put this into a Hollywood framework, but it's quite a striking thing. Now, the Rebbe is going to take this verse, this idea, the whole idea, and transform it, or open the door, and through it, we're going to get a teaching, hopefully, which can apply to us, and which we can apply every day of our lives. So, let's see how that works. So first we'll have, although when this mimer was said, it did not have the melody of the mimer with it. But nonetheless, for us, it'll help us understand it if we do have the mimer melody. Oh, yamba, ya, 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 yamba, yo, ya, ya, yamba, ya, yamba, yo. Yamba, ya, yamba, yamba, boom. Hi, yamba, 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 yo. Ya, yamba, yamba, yo. Ya, yamba, yamba, yo. Hi, yamba, hi, yamba, yo. Ba, ya, 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 yamba. Oh, ya, 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 yamba. Oh, ya, ya, yo, 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 yo. Vayikach min haba biyado mincha, and he took from the things that came to his hand a gift. Umavay bazeh baruchka v'amamarei chasidut hanitbasim, and it explains in length about this in the Hasidic discourses, the Chabad Hasidic discourses, which have been printed, and footnote 2 gives a kind of a list of some of these. And also, in one of the manuscript volumes, there was a whole cache of manuscript, cache with a C-H-E, a whole bunch of manuscript volumes that had been rescued through the Holocaust, and they had now come to New York, and gradually they were being printed by the Rebbe, and so each week, he tends to say something from one of these manuscript volumes. So one of these volumes, which is, it's a volume of teachings by the Tzemach Tzedek. Shekol hakorbanot v'tfilot, all the offerings and the prayers, that means all the offerings that were offered in the temple, the sacrifices in the temple, and the prayers, our daily prayers. Now, our daily prayers correspond to the korbanot. They correspond to the offerings in the temple. Shebemikom korbanot tiknum. The sages established the prayers in the place of the sacrifices. When the temple was destroyed, we didn't have the regular temple service, so the daily prayers are organized to replace them. So we have the Shacharit prayer, which is like the morning offering in the temple. Then there's the Mincha prayer, which corresponds to the Mincha, the afternoon offering in the temple, although he's going to present another view on that as well. And on Shabbat, we have an extra prayer, like there was an extra offering called Musaf. So it's the same term. The extra offering in the temple was called Musaf, the additional offering. And so we have an additional prayer in the morning service on Shabbat. Now, all of these offerings and the prayers are in general nikraim b'shem mincha. They're called mincha. Okay, now that's an interesting thing. Because mincha, on the one hand, we can think of it like the afternoon prayer is mincha. But when it talks about Jacob offering, bringing a mincha, sending a mincha to Esau, it means a present. So, v'tama dava, why are the offerings in general and the prayers called mincha? Dehine avodat ha-korbanot, because the service of the offerings, v'chein avodat ha-tfila, and also the service of prayer, hi avodah milamata lemaila, is a service which moves from below to above. Now, in other words, prayer is something dynamic. It's not just a matter of us saying the words of the prayer. There is some kind of spiritual movement taking place. And the movement is a movement from the person towards the divine. So our normal way of conceiving that is the person is on earth and the divine is in heaven. It's, why should the divine be conceived of as being in heaven? God is everywhere. But nonetheless, it's the heavens which particularly in their vastness and in their beauty, which express the glory of God. Hashamayim mesapchim kavod kel. The heavens tell the glory of God, it says in the psalm. And Isaiah says, lift up your eyes to the heavens and see who created this. You know, he could have said, look down a microscope at a crystal and see who created that. So it's quite true that godliness is revealed in everything and in every detail of life. But in ordinary, especially if you have smokeless skies, the night sky has a stunning beauty to it. And so that's a so we think of prayer as something where we're moving from below upwards, and that's the service of prayer, which contrasts. This is line 7. V'chayadua, and is known, ma'alat avodat ha'tfila v'korbanot. The significance of prayer, and for that matter the offerings that are brought in the temple, are also seen as something going up. The Zohar describes it as you bring the offering on the temple, you put it on the altar, there's the fire on the altar, and what's actually happening is Raza de Korbana, the secret of the offering, rises to the heights, rises to the infinite. So the prayer and the offerings in the temple are seen in the same way. Now, this has got a special quality contrasting al avodah de Torah mitzvot, compared with Torah, study of Torah, and mitzvot, keeping mitzvot. Now, in which way? What's the contrast? Shetorah, because study of Torah, what is happening? Inyana hamshacha milamayla lamata. Torah comes as a flow from above to below. Ki haTorah hi chokhmato shel haKadosh Baruch Hu. Torah is the wisdom of God. V'limud haTorah shel haAdam. And when a person studies Torah, la'amitato, in a true way, hareze b'ofen detan b'shoni imratecha. This is, if we are really studying Torah, we're doing it in such a way that my tongue is repeating your words. We are responding and repeating al dvarav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the words of God. Now this is a very beautiful way of understanding what Torah is. So this Torah could be the five books of Moses, the Chumash, with the idea that it's all a flow from godliness, and we can say it, and we can try to understand it, and our minds wrap around this divine speech, which is coming from infinite heights down into this world, and we are connecting with it, and we are embracing these Torah concepts. Now, it's not only the written Torah, it's also the oral Torah, right down to this teaching that we're studying at this moment. Now, it's true that the Rebbe said this teaching. So in what sense is it coming from the exalted heights? It's a teaching that a very great scholar explained. Well, that's the difference between a Rebbe and a rabbi. That's one of the many differences. As Jonathan Sacks, Chief Rabbi Emeritus, Jonathan Sacks put it, what's the difference between a rabbi and a Rebbe? A rabbi speaks to 500 people. And he might be saying, you know, you've got to improve, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. And each person thinks he's talking to the next guy, not to me. A Rebbe speaks to 5,000 people, and each one thinks the Rebbe's speaking directly to me. So that's a concept which... Now, how does the Rebbe do this? And what does it mean, the Torah teaching of a Rebbe? One of the texts that I teach in college is a text by a disciple of the second leader of Hasidism, the Mezritcher Magid, And there's someone called Reb Zev Wolf of Zhytomyr. And he said, I'll tell you the Magid, the Mezritch Magid, the Magid of Mezritch. Magid means preacher. But that was the name given to this second leader of Hasidism, Rabbi Dov Ber. So I'll tell you, Rabbi Dov Ber said, I will tell you how to say Torah. It's not that you make up the Torah, you work out what you're going to say. You become a channel. The way he says it, he says the world of speech speaks through you. Now, what's the world of speech? The world of speech means the Sphira Malchut, the attribute of kingship. And the attribute of kingship is speaking through you. And so the words that you are saying are actually coming from beyond you, and they're coming through you, and you're now uttering them. If you begin to hear the words as your own speech, you should stop, he said. It's not that you're giving your ideas. It's something going through you. So this is the way that Rabbi Dov Ber, this is around 1770, he's teaching a whole group of disciples, many of whom became famous Hasidic leaders in their own right. One of them was Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi, who became the founder of Chabad. But there are other rabbis as well, famous rabbis, who became the heads of chains, dynasties of the Hasidic movement, many of them continuing till this day. So the Torah that we're studying is actually something which comes from beyond. And so when we are studying this, it's something which comes from beyond, and we are then repeating these words and saying the words that comes from beyond. So it's something from above to below. And then v'afilu mitzvot, 13:9. Now even mitzvot, she'ikaran sha'adam yekayim otam. The main thing about the mitzvah is that a person does it. Let's say having a mezuzah on the door. All right, so we put the mezuzah on the door, so we're doing it. Hare ha'avodah b'zeh. But what we're actually trying to do, we're trying to keep something that God commanded, that you should write these words, the Shema, on the doorposts of your house. But if a person makes up a mitzvah, now this is very relevant to the world that we're in at the moment, where people are very enthusiastic about making things up, you know, and they feel they want their creative bit in what they're doing. So they want to create a mitzvah, you know, a new mitzvah in some way. So if a person, it says over here, right, this is in 1964, if a person makes up something which shelot tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which God did not command, v'yachshov lekayem mitzvat Hashem, and he thinks he's keeping a mitzvah from God, it doesn't work that way. Sorry. Hari hu over b'bal tosif. He's transgressing the concept, do not add anything to the Torah. There are 613 mitzvot, don't add another one. Mashe'en kein tefillah. Whereas prayer is a different matter. V'al derech ze korbanot, and similarly the offerings. Now what is the prayer? Inyanahu tefillat u'bakashat ha'adam. Prayer is us praying to God, asking something from God. The human being is reaching towards God and speaking about what we need. And the content of the prayer, very often, is about things that we need, things that we lack. Even though tefillah itself, prayer itself is a mitzvah, the concept of this mitzvah is that a person should ask for his things, the things that he wants. Since prayer is a service from below to above, so one second, let's just understand this. So if the person is asking for his or her things in the prayer, the prayer, in fact, is us. It starts off with us reaching towards God, asking God to fulfill this request. But it's something that's coming for us now. And what one person needs is not what another person needs. One person has this issue, another person has that issue, as something else. Even if we don't see prayer as simply asking for things, we might see prayer as an attempt to cleave to the divine. That one of the ways of understanding the word tefillah is to cleave to God. So by saying the words of the prayer, we're actually reaching towards God in order to be connected with God. But that too is something personal. It's the individual who is reaching towards God. Torah comes down from above. Now, it's very true that when we study Torah, each one of us is able to make our own contribution to Torah in the way that we understand it, and we might write commentaries on the Torah, which in fact might become part of the Torah itself, because much of the Torah, in terms of all the books of Torah books which are available, many of them are commentaries written by people, great scholars and lesser scholars, who have written commentaries on things. And in that way, the Torah, which comes from God, is being made more and more accessible to people here in this world. But it's still coming from above to below. We're assisting it. Many of the commentaries are assisting the process of understanding what the Torah is saying. But it's trying to get to the omek, to the depth of what the Torah is saying. And even the mitzvot, there is a level where we are contributing in the sense of the way we do the mitzvah. You know, I mean, people don't necessarily think about it in competitive terms, you know, but we had Sukkot, so there's the way each different family create their own sukkah. Now we're coming to Hanukkah, you know, there are different kinds of menorah. Some people have this kind of menorah, another kind of menorah. That's a candle menorah, an oil menorah, all kinds of different shapes. I remember once we had in England a very interesting, this was a competition. It was an art competition to fashion a beautiful charity box, a pushka tzedakah, a charity box. And the most remarkable things were created, and I think they were auctioned at Sotheby's, something like that. That was a very fascinating event with a kind of universal dimension. So there, you know, so charity is a command that comes from God. We're supposed to do the command. But then there's the individual ways of making the charity box or some other aspect. So, but prayer is all from the individual, except you've got the wording of the prayer. Okay, the wording of the prayer comes from the men of the great assembly. So one can think of the wording of the prayer, it's like the score of a piece of music. And then the way you play that score, that's your individual contribution. That's you do that in a unique way, and that's you. So line 21. Since prayer is a service from below to above, it's got a special quality of a person wanting the work of his own hands or God. Let's have a look at the commentary, line 63. Line 63, the little lines on the left. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitaveh kevyachol. God desires, so to speak, lebakashot ulefolot shel hanivraim hatachtonim, for the requests and the actions of our created beings in the lower world. Lamrot sheheim ma'aseh yadav, even though these created beings, he made them himself. Ulecha'ora ein biyecholtam latet lo me'uma. And you might think a human being can't give anything to God, but nonetheless we can. God wants to hear our prayers. There's even a rather perhaps challenging statement by the sages. Why is it that among the that among the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, so many had difficulties in having children. So Sarah didn't have a child for many years. Rebecca didn't have a child for many years. And with Jacob's wives, Sarah and Leah, Rachel and Leah, Rachel was yearning for children. So one of the explanations is God wanted to hear the prayers of people. Now that, you know, can be quite a challenging statement. You can look at all kinds of problematic situations in our history. You know, is it so that God wanted to hear our prayer? But nonetheless, this concept of God wanting to hear our prayer, shelechein harihim agad lemaile yoter, so therefore prayer reaches higher, me'asher avodat ha'amshacha milemaile lemata, than does the flow which comes from above to below. Our prayer reaches a higher level. V'lachein, and therefore, nikaot kol ha'tfilot b'shem mincha. Now we come back to the beginning, what it said at the beginning. Therefore, all the prayers are called mincha. And so now we're going to look at this word mincha. Rosh Tevot, Mem Nun, Chet, and He. Okay. So we're going to... So there's Mem and Nun, Chet, and He. Okay, so that's the word mincha. Now, the first thing is, Upeirusho. What does that mean? Okay, we go over the page. Man, Mem Nun, stands for something. Mayim Nukvim. Now, the image is, it's actually Mayim with a Nun, with an N, because it's in Aramaic. Feminine fluid, feminine flow. Now, feminine flow is seen that there's a masculine flow in the relationship between male and female, which really is based on a spiritual paradigm, an exalted spiritual paradigm of the divine and the attribute Malchut, that there's really a relationship, a flow between the Sfirot from the higher level of Sfirot, like kindness, severity, and so on, flowing into Malchut, into kingship. But in order for this to take place, there's also a reaching from kingship to the upper level in order to become a vessel to receive that radiance. Because otherwise it won't be a vessel to that radiance. So there is a flow of this feminine fluid from below to above. So our prayer functions as a flow from us as, so to speak, the female, all of us, whether men or women. We are all feminine in relation to God, and there is a flow from us towards God, and that flow takes place through prayer. In fact, other aspects of our service as well, mitzvot, other things as well, constitute this feminine flow. It is the way that we are reaching upwards to the divine. Now then, chet. So this flow, this mem nun, signifies something which is flowing upwards. Chet has the numerical number 8, shemagad b'mazal hashmini shelamayla mishtal shelu. It reaches the 8th level, which is higher than the downchaining of worlds. So the flow goes very high. The chet represents the way it goes to the very highest level. Now it's interesting comparing the chet here with the chet in Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The discourse doesn't make this comparison, but we have this idea of Echad. And so there, Aleph represents the oneness of God. Chet is the number 8, which represents the 7 heavens and the earth. So it's like the vertical plane. And Dalet represents the 4 points of the compass on the horizontal plane. And godliness fills all of it. Now here, in Mincha, in this explanation of the word Mincha, the word chet symbolizes the highest level. Like the highest level, in fact, higher than the 7 heavens, is beyond, is the 8th level, absolutely beyond. So there's a flow which goes upwards. Maybe we can use a different color. So there's the flow which goes upwards, and that reaches the highest level expressed by the Chet, which is that level which is beyond all the downchaining of the world. So the power of our prayer towards God has that quality. And then we come to the letter Hey. And the letter Hey, Umisham Nimshach Behei Tata'a. And from there, there is a flow into the lower letter Hey, Sfirat HaMalchut, which is the attribute of Malchut, Shoresh U'Mekar U'Mekor HaNivraim, the root and the source of everything created. So in other words, now when it says the lower Hey, it means the lower Hey of the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, the tetragrammaton. We've got the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, but there is a flow coming down from the Chet into the Hey, which is like the lower Hey of the divine name, and from there it flows down into the world. So in other words, when we are praying, we are reaching up to the divine, and then there is a response down. Now this is remarkably similar to the dream of the ladder, with the angels going up the ladder and then angels coming down the ladder. And the Zohar says the ladder represents prayer, and there are various discourses which talk about it in this sort of sense, that the angels going up the ladder, that's the spiritual energy which goes up, which goes beyond. And then there's a response coming down. And so here we have the way that from Malchut, Sha'al Yada Yumshach Be'olamot Briya Yitzira Asiya, from that letter Hey, from Malchut, kingship, there's a flow into the lower worlds, the worlds of creation, of formation and action, Ad La'Asiya Gashmit, to the physical realm of action, Liot Rofei Cholim, that God heals the sick, Umavarech HaShanim, and blesses the years. These are the blessings in the Amida, in the Shmona Esra. So the interesting thing is that what's happening in the Shmona Esra, in the Amida, is that we are rising to a very exalted level, and there is a flow which comes down into various practicalities. The middle blessings of the Amida describe all kinds of practical things. And so that is the flow which is coming down from the divine. That's this part of the this part of the cycle.
Seems to me that all of our actions are from below in order to establish a channel to receive a flow from above, and that we have to do something to initiate that. In all the cases we've been talking about here, even the mitzvot and study of Torah, we have to start that.
You can make that, you can say that. This is a very powerful concept which can cover every minute of our day, that there is this reaching towards the divine and there is the response from the divine back. And whether the response is something tangible in physical and practical terms, or whether it's something spiritual, some sort of sense of a spiritual connection, or it is a spiritual connection even if we are not sensitive to it, but there is this flow, this double flow taking place the whole time, the reaching upwards and the coming down beyond. And I think that actually at some point in the discourse he says that this does apply to other things as well, you know, so it's not ruling out Torah and mitzvah, but it's particularly intensely seen in prayer, where the way a person prays is in fact an invitation to move to the heights. When we're doing a mitzvah, we are usually doing something quite practical, like putting a mezuzah on the door. When we are studying Torah, very often the Torah is about, you know, it's about Jacob meeting Esau and how he sent this gift to Esau and what was his intention and how did Esau understand it. You know, so we're sort of, it's something which is down there in the world, and the Torah is revealed by God, so it's down here coming from the above. But in prayer, it's a very obvious thing that we're somehow stepping upwards to reach the divine. That's okay. Section Bet. V'hine, behold, afal pi shekol ha'tfilot, even though all the prayers, according to what we've just said, nikraot b'shem mincha, are called mincha, meaning a gift, an offering, from the fact that the afternoon prayer, which is called mincha, that has this name, move on, we can understand that the main concept of what this gift to the divine is, and he spells it out in the brackets, hala'a milamata lamayla, a movement upwards from below to above. Over melan, automatically, gam ham shachat ha'or, this results in a flow of radiance, shalamayla mishtalshlut, from a realm above the downchaining of worlds, ad lamata mata mata, till it comes to the very lowest level. So this whole process, the Rebbe now says, hu bitfilat mincha dafka, this actually happens most particularly in the afternoon prayer. Because there is the morning prayer and the evening prayer, and the afternoon prayer expresses this cycle most strongly. And he's going to spell that out. V'lechein amru chachameinu zal. Therefore our sages said, Le'olam yehei adam zahir betfilat mincha. A person should always be careful to say mincha, the mincha prayer. Shahari Eliyahu lo na'ana, because Elijah on Mount Carmel in Haifa, his contest with the Baal worshippers, where they both built an altar, and the Baal worshippers took an offering, a bull, and they slaughtered it and put it on the altar, and they're supposed to call to Baal to answer them and send fire and burn the offering, and nothing happened. And then Elijah put his offering on his altar, and he called to God, and fire came from God and burnt the offering. So when did that happen? It says in the Book of Kings, where this is being described, that it was around the time of the Mincha offering. Now the Mincha offering is an offering in the temple in the afternoon. So that was the time that Elijah was answered by God in this miraculous way, and everyone shouted, Hashem Hu Elokim, the Lord is God, which we now say on Yom Kippur, the closing climax of Ne'ilah, we all say, Hashem Hu Elokim, the Lord is God, but seven times. But that took place at Minchata. V'habeo b'zeh. Now, so therefore the sages tell us that the Mincha prayer is very important. Now, there's an explanation here that is very often repeated in Hasidic thought. V'habeo b'zeh, the explanation of this, I'm sure one of you can tell me, why is Mincha so significant?
It's the hardest one to do.
Yes, why?
Because you're busy with your daily activities.
That's right, exactly. You're busy with your daily life. That's how he's going to explain it. The explanation is the morning prayer. It's the beginning of the day. Before we get involved in doing anything, we pray the morning prayer. The evening prayer is at the end of the day. We've already left the workaday world, and then we're saying the evening prayer. Aval tefillat mincha, but the mincha prayer, the afternoon prayer, which we can pray now. It's winter. It's shortly after 12. It's time we can say the mincha prayer already. Ba be'emtza halahat hakoch b'inyanei olam hazeh. It comes in the middle of the whole involvement of this world. Umibli habeit ala asakim v'tchadot, and without considering, ideally, without considering all the things a person might be involved in, hari hu menateket atzmo mehem, he uproots himself from them, umitpalel mincha, and prays the afternoon prayer. V'lechein avodah zu hi ikar inyan, so therefore this service is the main idea, the halat mayim nukvin, of lifting up these feminine waters. That means reaching to God from the things that we're doing. And it's going beyond the things that we're doing. And that tearing oneself away, that itself has something precious about it. Okay, so therefore, the morning prayer and the evening prayer can be seen to be in a kind of pretty sacred domain. You know, the person gets up, they're in their home, men might go to the synagogue, a woman might pray at home, but it's all in a sort of very spiritual atmosphere, and then the day is going to begin. Mincha is in the middle of a kind of profane world, a worldly, a mundane world, a world where there are all kinds of materialistic, physical aspects to be concerned about. And nonetheless, from that, the person tears themselves away in order to pray. But in a sense, they're not tearing themselves away from the world around them. They're elevating the world. Because at this moment, they are now praying instead of working. And so the work that they are supposed to be doing, that becomes a kind of a cradle for this prayer. Now then in line 25, he gives an interesting perspective on mincha. This is also the reason. There are opinions about the mincha prayer, even in some sense in halachic terms as well. Mincha doesn't correspond to the korban. As I mentioned before, the normal way of looking at it is the mincha corresponds to the afternoon offering. But now the Rebbe is saying there's an opinion that it doesn't correspond to the afternoon offering, kamo tefillat shachrit ve'avit, like the morning prayer relates to the morning offering, the evening prayer relates to the things that were left over in the temple to be burnt in the evening. Eile keneged ketoret. The mincha prayer represents the incense. Now that's a very beautiful idea. Because we have the idea of the regular offering, and that is like shachrit, and then we have the idea of the incense, and the incense has this actual dimension. O k'mo shekatuv, now this view is supported by a verse. Tikon tfilati, may my prayer be established, ketoret, like incense, lefanecha, before you, O God, masat kapai, it is the gift of my hands, minchat arev, a pleasing gift. And the word mincha is there when talking about my prayer and incense. So prayer, incense, and mincha are all connected together. We're now on page Zion.
Arev, you said, is pleasant.
Arev here means pleasant.
Kol Yehudi Arev, each other. Is it the same word? Isn't it?
That is the same word. Yes. Yeah, but in this, I think here in this sense, it means a pleasing gift to God. Now, what he's going to do now is link the concept of the incense with the fact that the mincha prayer is in the middle of the working day and is surrounded by working attitudes and issues, and we somehow, in that situation and from that situation, we pray to God. Which means, in a sense, that the workaday world is being focused into connecting with the divine for a short time in the middle of the afternoon. Or maybe the prayer is only short, but the effect is long. Ve'inyim b'zeh, and what this means is, de'hine achiluch ve'en korbanot uktochet hu b'chama inyanim. There are a number of ways in which the ordinary sacrifices, on the one hand, and the incense, on the other, differ. And umehem, in one of the ways they differ, shekol ha-korbanot ba'im rak midvarim tohorim. The offerings come from pure animals, shemitbarerim al yadam, which are purified by the fact of bringing the offering is reaching some holy quality within those animals. Mashe'en came back tohet, but the incense, hayu gam dvarim tmeim, there were impure things in the incense. The incense is made from all kinds of different spices. Some of them have an impure source, like a non-kosher source. Shazel in, and so that's a fascinating thing in itself. The incense also had in it a spice which didn't have a good smell. It had a very negative smell. Nonetheless, it's part of the incense. And so there are other things which are actually non-kosher, but they're also part of the incense. Now, so what's happening? The incense it connects with a lower, impure level of the world and refines that and elevates that and brings out the purity and the holiness which is hidden in the impurity and the forbidden dimension. So that's the thing. Shezer inyan biru shalosh klipot hatmeyot. That is the sifting and the purifying of the three impure klipot, the negative dimension of existence, where there is a negative dimension which hides the God. Nonetheless, that somehow becomes part of the ketoret, part of the incense, and it's elevated to God and it reveals God. Umitam zen, because of this, magad haktoret lemayle me'akorbanot, the incense reaches a higher spiritual level than the offerings. V'lachein nikraim korbanot b'shem achila, therefore the offerings, the ordinary offerings, are called eating. Kumo shekatuv et korbani lachmi l'shai, as there's a verse, my offering, God says, my food, so to speak, for my fires. So it's called food. So the offering is in some sense something which can be eaten, as it were. Lahavdil, I mean, it's an image, but the fact that there is that image is an important thing. Whereas ketoret is not food, it's linked rak l'reach, to scent, the power of scent. Shereach magia banefesh, and the scent reaches the soul. Lemailu me'achila, higher than eating. V'cheinu gam. So, in other words, in a human being, it's an image which is often quoted in Hasidic thought, that if someone's fainted, you give them smelling salt in order to restore them. So, the idea is that the smelling salts, the smell, reaches into some inner dimension of the person. And so here too with mincha and the offering of the mincha and the prayer of the mincha, it is something which reaches above in a very intense way, more than the ordinary korban, not the ordinary offerings. It goes to a very exalted point.
Is that in a way like in the creation of a person, that the body is like the korbanot, but the soul comes through the breath. Right? Mm. God blew the soul into us.
Well, so that's much higher. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that relates to the way this discourse is looking at things. So then he gives another image. Umaylet hareach al achila. The significance of scent over ordinary eating. Muvenit gam mizek, we understood she'achila hi bepeh, eating is with the mouth. Shehusha lechitzoniyot hamochin, and the mouth is the gate to the external part of the mind. V'reyach hu bechotem, where a scent comes through the nose. Shehusha lepnimiyot hamochin, which is the gate to the inner part of the mind. Now, va'afal pi shegam al korbanot nema, even though concerning the other offerings, it also says reach nichoach, a pleasing scent. So, and then he explains that the korbanot, the offerings, in fact, they themselves are an example of this mayim nukvin reaching upwards towards God, and that's why they have the quality of scent as well. So he then explains at the end of the page. Hinei bereich gufa, in scent itself, yesh kama madrigot, there are a number of levels. There's the reach de korbanot, there is the scent of the offerings, reach de ktoret, the scent of the incense of the whole year, which relates shashayach lenekev hayemini shebachotem, which relates the right hand nostril, smelling the scent, v'reach de ktoret, and then there's the scent of the incense, the Yom Kippurim, of the holy, of the day of Yom Kippur, shebekodesh hakodeshim, which is in the holy of holies, sheshayich lenekev hasmali, which relates to the left hand nostril. So we're here looking at different levels of scent, and the way in which we're able to have a connection with the divine through the quality of scent. Okay, so we've got this point where the mincha prayer. See if we can just. So there's the morning and evening prayer, which can be thought of as being in a kind of holy environment. But then we have the mincha, which is the afternoon prayer, which is in a kind of unholy environment of daily life. I mean, it's not a forbidden environment, hopefully, although it might be. But in that atmosphere, it's simply worldly. It's worldly things. Morning, we haven't yet got going into the worldly dimension. Evening, we've come home from the worldly dimension. Of course, there's the principle that home, you know, where we begin and where we end up, is somewhere positive and spiritual. But mincha is right in the middle of everything else. And so morning and evening relate to the offerings, which are pure animals, whereas mincha relates to the incense, and the incense includes impure ingredients as well. So the incense is consistent with this idea of something which is profane, it's got a profane potential as opposed to the kosher offerings of the morning and evening. All right, so now in the next paragraph, we're going to come back to Jacob and Esau. V'zeu ma shekatuv, and that's what it says in the Torah, in our Sedra. Vayikach min abba b'yado, he took from the things that came to his hand, mincha le'esav achiv, a gift to Esav, his brother. Dehine ha'mincha sheshalach Yaakov le'esav, now the gift that Jacob sent Esau, inyana halat ma'im nukfin. This is the feminine flow that we've been talking about. Him giving a gift to Esau is the feminine flow reaching upwards. Now, what do you mean? Esau is his brother. How can this be the feminine flow to the divine? Lebchinat olam hatohu. It is a flow reaching upwards to the realm of chaos. So we have this very exalted spiritual realm, the realm of chaos.
Hello.
So we have this very exalted realm, the realm of chaos, which is an important step in the pre-existence of the world. So it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The world was in a state of chaos. Now the Kabbalists, particularly Rabbi Isaac Luria, explain that this state of chaos is a particular stage. It's a stage of intense radiance, of spiritual radiance, which is tremendously intense. And it causes havoc when it comes down below because the radiance is so intense. But really, it's holy in a very exalted way. Now, that level of the realm of chaos, that relates to Esau. That's the domain of Esau. That's the domain of Esau, and he is like this higher realm of chaos. So it is sending this flow reaching upward, leprinat olam ato, to the world of chaos, le'esav kamoshu hu b'shorsho, Esau the way he is in his root, an exalted level of Esau. And so since he's sending this gift to Esau, Shelachin Hayuba Min Chazu, there were in this present Gam Behemot Meot, also impure animals, like camels and donkeys. The Lokamo Kovanot the Tikkun, not like the offerings offered in the temple, which are from the realm of Tikkun, Shahayumi Behemot Torot Dafka, which only came from pure animals. Now the realm of Tikkun means repair. And we generally understand that there's the world of chaos and then the world of repair. And what we are trying to do, even though there are elements of chaos in the world that we inhabit, and that's why there's so many problems, but nonetheless, the ultimate is tikkun, elevating everything to the world of repair. Now, in the world of repair, the offerings which were in the temple are only pure. So we are trying to reach beyond the world of repair, to the world of chaos, to the realm of chaos. And in order to reach that, in order for Jacob to reach that, he has to send offerings which includes impure animals. And that's why the gift that he gave to Esau is called a mincha. Because it's like the afternoon prayer compared with the morning and the evening prayers. Because the afternoon prayer has in it profane qualities, and so therefore the animals he sent, which are also profane, non-kosher animals, they express that as well. And it's also and it's like the special quality of incense which contains non-kosher ingredients compared with the ordinary korbanot. So we're adding elements to this mincha, it's incense, and it reaches to the realm of chaos. Right? The world of chaos. The realm of chaos.
I learned that Yaakov's roots were in the world of Tikkun.
Mm-hmm.
And it says before here that Esau's roots were in Tohu.
Yeah.
So that's why he could reach through to him, or tempted to reach through. Or he thought he had already actually worked things out, but he hadn't when the 400 men came with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the whole complex.
Right. So Jacob is from the world of Tikkun. You're absolutely right. So the question is, where is the world of Tikkun? So normally we put the world of Tikkun over here, lower than the realm of chaos. And so Jacob is lower than Esau, and that's why Esau is the firstborn. But now, in the last paragraph of this discourse, the Rebbe is going to qualify that perspective. The Odin Yambazan, and there's another point here. First of all, consider it. The fact that Esau, representing the world of chaos, is the firstborn, is only in external terms. But in inner terms, actually, you know what? Jacob is the firstborn, in inner terms. And so from this we can understand a detail in a Hasidic discourse where it says, Vayishlach Yaakov melachim lefanav. Jacob sent angels before him. And it says in the discourse, lefanav mamash, really before him, el bechinah shelamayla mimenu b'madriga, to a level which is higher than his own level, bechinat malchin kadmon de Torah, to the realm of the original kings of the world of Tohu, the world of chaos. So he's sending some kind of message or to that exalted level. Dehine bepashtut. Now it seems that straightforwardly, hakavanah b'lashon admor zakin. What does Rabbi Shneur Zalman mean when he says this? When he says lefanav mamash, really to his inwardness, hilamal yuta. He's saying it in a positive way. Jacob sent messengers, not to something which is on the same level as him, to an inward level, to a level which is higher than him. But as we know from Rashi's commentary, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, that Jacob sent messengers. And so the messengers, Rashi says, Malachim Mamash. They're not just ordinary messengers, they're angels. Jacob sent angels. Sherachet HaMamash Shel HaMalachim. So what was he sending to Esau? Only the Mamash, only the reality of the angels did Jacob send Esau. But the spirituality of the angels, Nishara Eitzel Yaakov, remained with Jacob. Hainu, that means, Shakavanu Bamash, in the word Mamash, Hiligariuta is negative. Muvan, from that we understood, Shigam Lefan of Mamash, that when we're saying he sent something really to him, Huligariuta is in a sense a negative statement, because is Esau really higher than Jacob? That's what it's looking at here. Shezeh she'esav tohu lefanav. The fact that Esau, the realm of chaos, is higher than Jacob, hu rak b'mamash, is only in the external level. Avu b'pnimiyut, and in the inwardness, Yaakov hu lemaila yoter. So therefore, we have a further level where the level of Jacob is actually higher. We have Esau at the realm of chaos, and we have Jacob, right? So this is Esau, and Tikkun, we have been thinking that this is Jacob's level, but in fact, it's that's not the level, there's a higher level, and so that is what we are trying to focus on. And through the fact Sheyakov, that Jacob, Baal Olam HaTikun, who is the owner, so to speak, of the realm of Tikkun, the realm of prayer, Mevared HaNitzotzot D'Tohu, he sifts out the sparks of chaos, Shenaflu V'Shvirat HaKelim, which fell down through the breaking of the vessels, which is a cataclysmic event at the beginning of the whole process of history, Harihu Mamshech, he draws down. Not only does he draw down the Natan, which comes the Tohu, which comes, which is higher than Tikkun, Elegam Shabachina Shama Mabachina Shaba Olama Tikkun Hulamaili Yoter. He also draws from that dimension where the world of tikkun, the world of repair, is higher than that other world. So in other words, he's drawing from this level the upper tikkun. So we have a kind of a lower, he doesn't use this terminology, but there's a kind of upper tikkun and a lower tikkun. And he's teaching us how to connect with that level. So now it's ending off with this situation. Hari hu mamshech lo rak mibchinat ha'tor shekodma l'tikun. Now, the drawing down of a level which is not only of the chaos which comes before tikun, ele gam mibchinat sheba olam ha'tikun ulamayli yoter, but drawing from a much higher level in comparison to which the realm of Esau is on a lower dimension than the world of tikkun. Ba'al yedei zeh pa'al sheveyaratz esav likrato v'yechabkeyu v'yishakeyu. Now, there's an interesting thing in the Sedra. The Sedra has many very beautiful points. Because after Jacob sent this gift to Esau, he then wrestled with a man. And the sages understand that as the spiritual prince of Esau. So in other words, on some metaphysical level, he's having the battle with Esau. But then comes the day he actually does see Esau. He meets him face to face and he focuses on him and he achieves a sifting, a transformation of Esau. And that's the situation that when Esau did meet him, Esau wept and threw his arms round him. Now it ends off with a quote, Halacha hi biyadur. Now it's well known, She'esav shoneh Yaakov, Esau hates Jacob. But at that moment, Nitbatel Esav le'Yaakov v'neshakov b'chol libo. At that moment, Esau became secondary to Jacob and kissed him with all his heart. In other words, the Esau dimension has got a potential of love and of positive things. There are spiritual sparks in this realm of Esau, and if we are able to reach it with our mincha, with our afternoon prayer, or with our gift, or with maybe it's just an attitude within our lives, that we are able to make this transformation of the realm of Esau, where everything is transformed in a positive way. So that's a little bit of attempt to explore this brief but fascinating discourse.
Thank you. He gives kiss up to